You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Hello and welcome to this very special live, raw, and unedited edition of Making Tracks, episode 179, brought to you by those lovely folk over at fanfortracks.com. My name is Mark. I am one of the hosts of this lovely show, and joining me today at this very busy MCM Birmingham Comic Con, it's my good mate, Mr. Mark Newbold. How you doing, Marky? You alright?
I'm very well. It is noisy, it's very, very busy, and the car park prices are criminal.
Yes, they are through the roof, and you don't even have to charge your car here like I have, so.
That's true,
yeah.
That's true.
So how you been, dude? How's things?
Very well, yeah. Busy week on the site. Building up to Christmas. Seems to be loads of events going on at the moment. I mean, as we speak, there's this happening here. There's LA Comic Con, obviously, yeah. In LA. Next weekend, we've got Farthest From. There's Croydon Star Wars weekend. So there's all sorts of stuff going off. So it's very, very busy. News-wise, yeah, I think we've found a few things to talk about.
It's picking up a bit, which is good, you know. I did say after last week's episode that we won't get any big announcements before Christmas, and hey, lo and behold, we've got a couple of fairly big announcements, so you know, it's good for us to kind of get our teeth into.
So this week, has any cool Star Wars stuff come into your possession?
Do you know what? No. And that's partly because I haven't had a chance to walk around MCM Comic Con to see if there's any cool stuff to buy.
Same.
To be fair.
Same.
So we might have to do that in a bit. But no, nothing this week. It's been just hectic as hell. So yeah. How about yourself?
Not really. Little odds and sods. A couple of magazines have come, and a couple of books have come. Nothing to shout off from the rooftops about.
No. So what have you been up to?
I have had an interesting week since we last did an episode of Making Tracks. Well, since then, we've had an episode of Start Your Engines, looking at the Ghost. We've had an episode of Planet Leia, talking about all the latest news. So the site's been nice and busy. And since then, I did... Well, this was kind of cool, actually. Mm. So name drop. So myself and Brian Herring went down to London, to Bloomsbury Square, where we sat down with Bonnier Books, who had put on a Star Wars event.
Nice.
And we basically did a quiz with four teams, one of which was from Disney.
Yeah.
And to my great delight, not only did we win the quiz and ate loads of cupcakes and three bottles of wine.
Nice.
But Disney came last.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I ain't that surprised about that, and it probably says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
And they were very sweet about it.
Yeah, well, so they weren't bad losers.
No, they were not bad losers. They were very good losers.
So a question is, was there a question? Was there something that, like, either really caught you out?
There was two or three that were like, ooh, that was a real tricky one. And the one that got us, both of us, was, what was the name of the squadron, the Naboo fighter squadron in The Phantom Menace that obviously went up and took on the droid control ship at the end of the film?
I mean, you could tell by my face, I don't have a foggiest on that one.
Well, we didn't. It was Bravo Squadron.
Okay.
Which, when you hear it, it's like, of course, Bravo Leader, they're saying it all the way through.
Yeah.
It just didn't drop.
Yeah, it just doesn't connect, does it?
It didn't drop, no.
There you go.
Never made much of it because it's like a Naboo-only thing, isn't it?
Yeah, to be fair, actually, I mean, it's a shame because we don't really see that squadron again, like, not really.
No.
Not in the films anyway,
no.
So it doesn't resonate in the same way as, like, it might have done if it was, a recurring squadron.
And we don't see enough of the ship.
No.
Until Mando.
Yeah.
No, and it's a cool ship.
It is. It's one of my favourite ships. Definitely one of my favourite designs from the modern Star Wars from, you know, the last 30 years, really. So.
But who knew you could hot rod that ship up to get what Mando gets in season 3?
Yeah, that's nuts. Pretty cool. It's, you know, but I put that down to Peli Motto's amazing engineering. So.
And wonderful hairstyle.
Absolutely, yes.
Shall we get on with some news?
Let's do it, yeah.
Okay, so Dave Filoni's been talking about the future of Ahsoka. So obviously season 1, hopefully there'll be more, has just finished. He was speaking with Entertainment Weekly, and he reminded us just how long that first season took to come to fruition, because he's been at Lucasfilm for nearly 20 years, obviously working on the Clone Wars for all that time. He said, I'm just glad to get it out there in the first first place. Sometimes it's hard to pick what actually gets made and what doesn't, and it feels like a real privilege to just be able to create in this world and in this galaxy. He's got a choice of galaxies now, of course. That thrill has never gone away in my almost 20 years. It's crazy, isn't it, that technology's moved on so much that he starts off doing CG animation, which was cutting edge back when he started, and now technology's moved on so much and affordability that now we can do that in live action. My point being, if Dave Filoni joined Lucasfilm now, he'd probably just go straight into live action, wouldn't he?
Well, you'd kind of think so, yeah. I think they would probably fast-track him a little bit more, you know. But I think also we can't forget that in about 20 years he's actually spent time and he's learned, as it were, at the feet of the master, George Lucas himself. So but, you know, he's, I think, learned not only about how to make live action TV and film, but also I think he's learned how to make Star Wars in the most authentic way possible.
And do you think, because animation is a very different discipline to live action, but that you have to be probably more frugal, more, you know, assets are assets, aren't they, in CG? You can't just dream up anything. It can be done, but of course there's a cost that goes with every new character, every new ship or whatever. So he's probably learnt to be frugal in that old school independent Lucasfilm way that George would have showed him, that you'd think brought up to today would make that penny go further, would take, keep the story tighter, more concise.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, yeah, it's going to give him the kind of a discipline. It's a bit like, actually, so when I first started editing, we had to, even though I came from a digital world and I started on Avid and Premiere Pro, we had to go back, and at Sky, we started on tapes, going from tape to tape. And that actually gave you a real discipline, because you couldn't just simply just pick up a clip and move it down a timeline and stuff like that. You had to think about, like, your edit, and you had to think about the, you know, the length and the pace and stuff like that. Otherwise, you had to kind of almost go back and redo everything.
Yeah.
So, and that wasn't just for the editing, but also because of you weren't filming on, like, massive, like, media drives and stuff like that. It's down to the, you know, the filming ratios for, like, the camera crews and everything like that, which all had a knock-on effect on budget. So nowadays, when you get people who can just film for hours and hours and hours and can just put clips all over the timeline and spray around, it kind of like creates an inefficiency.
Yeah.
And I think you'll probably find that with Dave. I'm pretty sure that he will kind of like have a better appreciation of actually what can be achieved in a really tight, focused narrative without lots of extra baggage. And I think we saw that with Ahsoka. It's a very tight show. As you know, there's not much kind of like wasted screen time with anything. So yeah, I think that's probably what it comes down to.
It's interesting to think, though, you making the correlation to your own profession, that the skill and the craft of learning the process in Star Wars is essential to making Star Wars work in a way that other shows perhaps don't.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's also the, because you think Dave's quite the unique one. It seems like all the other directors have been cherry picked because they do some form of like production or some kind of like genre really well. Like with Gareth Edwards, you're going to do like the Save It Private Ryan in space and stuff like that. And like you look at creator and you're like, literally, you could put a Star Wars badge on that and that's Star Wars, like 100%.
Yeah.
And I think that's where maybe they've kind of slightly gone wrong at Lucasfilm, is that they've kind of like gone for these really specifically focused genre directors. And whilst Star Wars has all that in there, it's such a mix, but actually I don't think you can just kind of try and make a specific series one genre, because I think it becomes a little bit too one note.
He doesn't say that there's going to be a season two. We all hope there is, but he does kind of refer to it. Dave says, I've set up several threads that can continue, but if not, I feel like, well, at least I've got Ezra home, and that was really important, but there's always a plan. I hope one day we'll see it. It could be very cool, but it took a while to get it done, so you never know. Always in motion is the future. So basically, Dave has done the Dave thing by laying down seeds for future stories, future potential series or spin-offs or whatever it might be, but he's not saying it's going to happen. Do you think it's going to happen?
I would think it was going to happen. I mean, whether or not it happened straight away or not, I don't know. But I think, you know, that's a classic world-building kind of ethos, is actually plant some characters in positions whereby it automatically opens up a whole different avenue of storytelling. And in this case, we've opened up a whole different galaxy. And whether or not that is going to play much into the future of Star Wars storytelling generally, or that one planet. I mean, but there was enough left open-ended that there's got to be some kind of like ending to that, I think, at some point.
Yeah, totally. Lucasfilm being Lucasfilm, laying seeds for other stories, laying seeds for other ideas, it's quite a smart thing to do. Gives you the potential to do other stuff. And speaking of other stuff,
yeah,
Daisy Ridley,
yeah,
was speaking about her new film, The Marsh King's Daughter, which has just arrived on digital. She spoke to Collider, and obviously conversation turned to The Galaxy Far, Far Away. And she didn't mention this project that was first spoken officially anyway on stage at Celebration Europe. Quite a quote, but I shall read it out. I was asked some, not by you, but I was asked something when I was there, and strangely people were asking me stuff and I was like, no, I'm not doing another one. And then it all happened after I came back. It was such a nice reception. I was f***ing myself before I went on stage because no one knew I was going to that. No one knew I was going to Celebration Bar like Kathy Kennedy, and there were a couple of people. I was so nervous. Oh my God, it was such a wonderful reception. I'm very excited. The story is really cool. I'm waiting to read the script because obviously I don't have any other updates. It's not what I expected, but I'm very excited. And she goes on to say, I know the storyline for one film. That's not to say that's all it is, but that's what I was told about. And I imagine it will be the next film, I think. I mean, again, I don't know. Post-strikes and everything, how quickly everything will start up again. But yes, so far I know the story of one film, and I think people will be very excited. I think that quote puts validity to us referring to it as episode 10. It sounds like there's more plotted out for this trilogy already that's not been made than the previous one she was in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the one thing that seems to be probably quite telling from that takeaway, is that like she says that she knows like the story for one film. Now, I mean, obviously we could take that to mean that she only knows the story to her film and obviously the other films that
very
were
true,
announced
very true.
She doesn't know anything about, or yeah, potentially that means that actually, yes, you know, this could be a trilogy, which, you know, I strongly believe that. I think like with Star Wars, you still need to keep to a core trilogy kind of format.
Agreed.
for like the main thrust of a show and the storyline, but then you have, you know, standalone films around it to support it. And I think if they do that and they get this Rey story really kind of tight and nailed down, I think we could be in for something really cool and really special.
I agree. I think it's interesting. I don't know whether she's said too much there, whether she's inferring stuff from the things she's read herself, whether somebody at Lucasfilm, like when Donald Glover's brother came out and said, no, it's not a TV show, it's a film, is biting their fingernails down to the quick or what. But you've got to wonder how much, wow, it's got noisy here, hasn't it? What on earth is that? You've got to, it's a trolley. Let's go to an advert.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com. For Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
So once they get started filming, once they get started prepping, once everything starts moving into motion, we haven't got a celebration next year.
No.
So there won't be anywhere for people to particularly talk about it other than maybe New York and possibly San Diego. And I don't expect to see a teaser trailer or any kind of footage or photograph for a long, long time. And I kind of hope we don't. What about yourself? Do you like getting these little teases and snippets, or would you rather just, like we did almost with Phantom Menace when we kind of just saw the trailer back in the day, you just see something finished, something that you know they've edited down from?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, actually, so this week, I've had a lot of Facebook memories, actually, and a lot of them were like, 1 year ago or five
Me
years
too.
Ago, like,
yeah,
the Rogue One trailer dropped, and, like, yeah, the Force Awakens trailer dropped, or what have you. So, yeah, and that actually bizarrely took me back, and I'm like, you know, we still think it only happened like last year, but it was, you know, quite a while ago now. So
8 years ago.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is the thing, it's like people now are, and fandom is so, they're not as quite as patient as I think they once were.
No.
Or at least maybe the platforms are available to be, you know, vocal about how impatient you are.
Yeah.
And so you do wonder if we had like social media and Twitter and all that back in like 1998, whether or not it would be the same kind of scenario.
Yeah.
For me, I do like a decent teaser trailer. I mean, you know, you look at that first Phantom Menace teaser trailer compared to what we got for The Force Awakens. It was like two very different beasts.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it is quite nice just to see something. I think just to get us, because I think as soon as you start seeing something now, that starts a conversation, and that's when the excitement starts, and then suddenly everybody starts getting hyped up for it, which is like what we want, really.
It's kind of cool when you just see a glimpse of something or just get a snippet. I liked it when StarWars.com did the George Lucas Selects before episode 2, and you just saw the sort of a shot of Hayden on set, or just a shot of the webcam.
The webcam, yeah, you know, the blurry God knows what resolution it would have been like, probably 72 pixels or something square. You know, and it was always pointed at like the studio floor, so you couldn't really see anything other than like the ambient glow of blue or green screen.
It was enough though, wasn't it?
But exactly, you know, it's enough. It was something, you know, it kind of actually, you think now, like, you know, with how the film studios are, you would never be able to get away with that. No one would ever want to do that because it's all secret squirrel and mystery boxes and stuff. But actually, you know, I liked that. It was like, yeah, we're making the Star Wars film, so like, you know, we're not going to show you everything, but we're going to show you something. And that kind of makes the fandom come along for the ride, which I think is almost as important.
I'm Gareth Edwards, and you're listening to Making Tracks on FanthaTrax Radio.
And speaking of fandom coming along for the ride, next weekend is Farthest From.
Yep.
Pablo Hidalgo, Barry Gingell from Star Wars Andor are both going to be there. It's going to be awesome. I'm there, you're there, FanthaTrax is there.
Yep.
Very much looking forward to it. But there's another event happening over that weekend as well. It's Croydon Star Wars Weekend, 9th and 10th of December, and it's the final convention appearance both of Robert Watts and Michael Culver. Saturday has a real celebration-worthy list of guests. Michael Culver, as we say, Dennis Lawson, who doesn't do that many shows, Brian Herring, Angus McInnes, Jack Claff, Garrick Hagen, Sean Crawford, Tim Joy, Stephen Spears, Kenneth Colley, Glyn Baker, Jasper Jacob, Mike Edmonds, Paul Warren, Lynn Robertson-Bruce, I think it's one of her very first events as well, and Bill Hargreaves. And then on the Sunday, Angus again, Jack Claff again, Lewis McLeod, Andy Seacombe, Dave Chapman, Matt Denton, Tom Wilton, Steve Spears again, Amanda Lawrence, Jonathan Cass, Aidan Cook, Liam Cook, John Mogridge, and Alan Austin. So that's a heck of a lineup for a show.
That is a chunky load of people to meet and greet and get autographs from. I mean, that's a fantastic lineup. And the Star Wars weekend at Croydon is always a nice, intimate, low-key and relaxed kind of weekend, so it's well worth, if you're in the area, to kind of check it out.
Totally. We were there for the last couple of shows. We couldn't make it this year because, as we say, it clashes this year with Farthest From. We did speak to Robert Watts at the last show and Michael Culver. It's their final shows. Culver's been doing shows for 30 years. Robert Watts has been doing shows probably longer than that, if you include the events that he would have done to promote the films that he did. It's kind of sad to see these old legends sort of do their final shows, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. I'm pretty sure that actually the last Croydon event was meant to be Robert Watts' last
it was.
Show. And then I think so was Telford or something as well.
It was. So
never say never.
Bless him. I think he got a second wind and just carried on enjoying it.
Exactly.
But speaking of other people who've sadly left the Star Wars stage, Alan Fernandez, he was one of the original Tusken Raiders from A New Hope. He passed away on Friday the 17th of November, which of course was Life Day. Left behind numerous friends and family and people in the fandom. I met him once. I interviewed him on stage at London Film and Comic Con about 4 years ago. It's out there as an episode of Making Tracks, so you can go back and listen to it. But again, interesting fella. He'd done all sorts of stuff. He was like a lion tamer. He'd just done all sorts of crazy things. And just another fascinating person that leaves the Star Wars stage.
Films back then, like, was such a different kind of industry. And, you know, and people kind of came into it or fell into film in really different and unique ways. But I just don't think it happens these days. You know, now, like, last week, Rebel Legion and 501st, we were at the Futures Festival for Pinewood, and that's all about getting, like, the next generation of filmmakers engaged and actually, like, thinking about you can have a career in film, and it doesn't necessarily have to be as an actor or a director, but there's, like, thousands of supporting, like, roles and stuff, and that's just it. Like, you never know who that I may have had a photo with in my X-Men pilot who might end up being the next George Lucas or Steven Spielberg.
That's an interesting thought. What an interesting thought.
Yeah, you know, which is quite exciting. You know, they might end up actually directing a Star Wars film, for all we know. Whether or not I'll be alive to see it by the time we get round to it is another matter entirely.
Hi, this is Ethan Sachs, and you're listening to FanthaTrax.
Finally, back to Dave Filoni. He has a new role at Lucasfilm. He is now the Chief Creative Officer. Expands what he does already, kind of formalizes it. And again, I'm quoting a lot of people today, but Filoni did say, he says, now I'm what's called Chief Creative Officer of Lucasfilm. He's speaking to Vanity Fair, by the way. In the past, in a lot of projects, I would be brought into it. I would see it after it had already been developed a good way. So now he works obviously closer to Kathleen Kennedy and alongside Carrie Beck. And he's obviously been involved for many years, worked on all the shows that we talk about here on Making Tracks all the time. But he does say, in this new role, it's owned up to basically everything that's going on. When we're planning the future of what we're doing now, I'm involved at the inception phase. I thought that was the key phrase of the whole thing. Yeah. I'm not telling people what to do, but I do feel I'm trying to help them
tell the best story that they want to tell. I need to be a help across the galaxy here, like part of a Jedi Council almost. What do you make of that? Of all the people, you mentioned him sitting under George's learning tree back in the day when Clone Wars was starting, yeah. And now 20 years on, he's blossomed into the source, really, of what you would want to have involved in a Star Wars project. This, of all decisions in recent times, I would say, is probably the most popular and one of the smartest.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is probably the most welcome announcements we've had from Lucasfilm in, yeah, 2 or 3 years, I think, if I'm honest. Because there's that question, isn't it? Like, let's be fair. You know, Kathleen Kennedy isn't young, no. Like, in her career. She's been around for, you know, almost as long as George, let's be honest.
Yeah,
you know,
early 80s.
Yeah, so, you know, she probably has got a career expectancy in terms of like how long she wants to run Lucasfilm. And I think the thing is, like, from the people I've spoken to at Lucasfilm, she's very good at running the company, but it's for creative decisions that they yes. need almost somebody else.
Yeah.
Whereas George could almost do everything, or would delegate the company aspects and focus on the creative. They kind of need that, and I think this is good because it's a way of coalescing what they started with, a story group as well, and giving a figurehead, and also I think somebody that I think hopefully the fandom can relate to. I mean, maybe it's the equivalency of like a Kevin Feige from the MCU, which, you know, look how good that was, you know, for the MCU.
That's a good point, because as you say, George did everything pretty much, all delegated. And in comics, we spoke recently at New York Comic Con to Charles Soule, and Charles sits above, not above, that's probably unfair, but he works with the creators and the writers of the four main titles and sort of plots out the big beats,
yeah.
And that's his role, and he has an involvement with Lucasfilm as well. And it feels in the same way that Charles Soule now has that sort of role in the comics, Filoni's going to have it in the TV shows. Now, obviously, there was a lot of pressure with Ahsoka for him,
yeah.
For Filoni personally. Wanted to land it, I would argue, and I think most people would, that he stuck the landing and made a great series of television. But now, do you think this means he takes a slight step back from the front line of filming, from the front line of writing? Do you think this means he, not an executive role, that's not what we want for Dave, but this allows him to have that sort of step up a level and just have an overview of more stuff? And will that suit him at this stage of his career?
Yeah, I think probably that kind of like that elevated kind of view is probably what we need, isn't it? Because, you know, there's with multiple spinning plates, you need somebody who's going to be able to kind of see what plates are wobbling,
yeah.
And at what point, especially if it's a story thing. Because let's be honest, I mean, everybody that Lucasfilm and Disney employ on Star Wars can make a film or can make a TV show, yes. At a very, very high level. But it's nailing the story and getting that interconnectivity in organic and I think also new and interesting ways is what we need for the franchise to kind of progress further.
And doesn't that go back to something that we identified earlier, almost in jest, about Daisy saying, I know kind of the story of the first one, I don't know any more, but I know the story of the first one, alluding to the fact they've probably plotted out a trilogy,
yeah,
logically.
I mean, yeah, or a series.
Or
yeah,
a series,
yeah.
And they didn't with the sequel trilogy, which is known, that's not talking out of school.
No, and I think, you know, I kind of get it. You know, it's a little bit kind of it's experimental, but it's experimental not with like a $20 million budget, but it's experimental with like $250 million
yeah.
budget films, which is in itself kind of like pretty crazy. And you kind of and you think in hindsight, well, maybe that wasn't the best ideas. However, let's be honest, they probably learned from that, and
yeah.
You know, and maybe yes, some people could say that was a lesson that they shouldn't have had to have been taught. However, that's a lesson. And if that means that we, you know, we're going to get something that's going to be more, like, connective and, yeah. And I don't know, exciting for the new stories in a way that's not going to feel, like, disjointed. And I think that's ultimately a positive.
And it's kind of obscene in this era now. With people, money generally around the world, money's tight.
Yeah.
People have had a tough time the last few years, and there's Disney throwing $250 million up the wall,
yeah.
On various projects that don't land, and just in recent memory, in the last 5 years, Solo cost $300 million, didn't do well. Indie cost $200 million plus, didn't do well. The Marvel's the same.
Yeah.
Disney have fallen into this very unfortunate trap and situation. Even Wish, that came out last weekend, had a real soft opening. It's a cracking film as well. So they're putting out the properties, but every franchise now is having films that stumble. You never imagined when Force Awakens came out you'd have a Star Wars film wouldn't do well.
No.
You never imagined, even when Crystal Skull came out and made 800 million worldwide, that you'd have an indie film that didn't do well. And yet, here we are.
Yeah.
So to have a director who is, as we said at the top of the show in the previous Filoni piece, organised in his writing and frugal in what he does and smart in how he plays it, to have him sitting over the top of all these different, as you said, spinning plates, can't be anything but a good thing, can it?
No, and I tell you what actually does happen if episode 10, as it were, comes out and it has the same kind of box office numbers as either Solo or like the Marvels or Indiana Jones, you know, what does that actually mean to the franchise, and possibly what does that mean to the industry as a whole? You know,
well, you mentioned Edgar Wright before we started recording. You mentioned something Edgar Wright has said about how big franchises need to take a pause sometimes and have a break.
Yeah,
maybe
that's right.
The time.
Maybe it is. I mean, maybe that's what they need to do before that. Maybe actually, okay, we've got season 2 of Bad Batch and Skeleton Crew and Acolyte, but maybe that's it. You know, you go into episode 10 with like not having seen Star Wars for at least 6 months, if not a whole year.
Yeah,
that's kind of what you want. Because I think people forget about it. They forget actually what it means to have a Star Wars film. Like, and you get used to seeing it. Like I said, like, you know, I was looking at my memories and I thought it was only like last year that Rogue One kind of came out. And it clearly just shows you how busy we've been since then. But,
no kidding.
You know, but I think, you know, it's important because it drives a hunger. And I think the hunger is what then gets people into that cinema for that first weekend. You have a strong weekend, a strong opening weekend, that really pushes the rest of the sales in, like, for the rest of that run, like, much, much higher.
And it tells you how things have changed, because this December, as we sit right now,
yeah,
originally you would have had on the same day at one point a new Star Trek film and a new Star Wars film.
Yeah.
And when that was announced, one, hey, how cool would it be to have both of them going off at the same time? But also, it felt then that, wow, we are so ready for a new Star Wars film. I think right now, my turn in personal thinking is, I'm quite happy to wait another couple of 3 years because I want them to stick the landing. On television, it's a mixed bag, but there's nothing that's failed, you would argue.
Yeah.
But on the big screen, there's so much more at stake.
That's it. And I think, I suppose it's working out the synergy between the big screen and the small screen. And having seen Ahsoka, I think they kind of experimented there a little bit with actually putting so much emphasis on characters from a animated show that, yeah, you know, like, not all the population would have seen or heard of, you know. And again, so that's obviously going to have a knock-on effect as to, like, the uptake of Ahsoka. And also, it's like, what they're going to do going forward with the new franchises. Are we going to have B characters have their own spin-off series on Disney Plus? Probably, but what we don't want is, we don't want an oversaturation where, like, it's Star Wars all the time, whereby everybody's kind of a bit sick and bored of it by 6 months later down the line. Right, so as the show is progressively getting busier and busier, it's still only halfway through the day, I think it's about time that me and you, Mr. Newbold, go and see if we can buy some Star Wars stuff. So on that note, we're going to leave it here for this week's episode, and thank you very much for listening. And until next week, Mark, mm-hmm, can you make sure that you let everybody know how they can get in touch with us so they can send all those lovely listeners' questions we've been getting recently?
Thank you for listening to Making Tracks. If you want to be a part of the action, visit fanthatracks.com and be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at fanthatracks. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatracks.com. You don't walk away. I know what you're walking away from. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the Fanthatracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings at 9 o'clock UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. And on Twitter now, I believe, or X, whatever they call it. And check out our Fantatracks Radio Friday night rotation. It's every Friday night, 7 o'clock UK time, for new episodes of The Phantom from Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Disc, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Can of Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks. And every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, Fantatracks.com, our social media feeds, Fantatracks TV, and Fantatracks Radio are absolutely free. So no Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news. And that's me done for this episode, and I'm going to go and spend money, but don't tell the wife.
Brilliant. Right, let's go buy some plastic fantastic. And everybody else, stay safe, take care, enjoy your Star Wars week, whatever that means to you. And until the next week's episode, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanta Tracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.